So we're going to hear the first part of our Bible story this morning as Mel comes to read to us.
Reading from Luke's Gospel, chapter 24, beginning at verse 13. Now, on the day that Jesus was resurrected, two of his followers were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still and their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you only a visitor to Jerusalem and do not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place."
So in the Easter scene that we have before us this morning, we're starting in a bit of a strange place, which I think fits with the prayer that we've just prayed. Anyone who has flicked back to the beginning of the chapter we're reading, chapter 24, would have seen that the tomb is already empty. The women had been told the good news of the resurrection. It's Easter day. And certainly in our house, I don't know about yours, the Easter eggs have already been consumed. But the women's message of Jesus' new life of Easter seemed like nonsense to the rest of Jesus' followers. It literally says nonsense in the Bible in verse 11. I guess they accepted that the tomb was empty, but they had no idea what that meant, except perhaps more trouble for the people who were following Jesus. And now our two that were up on the picture, Cleopas and probably his wife Mary, were headed out of the city. They didn't know what to think, but it's clear that they were scared, very confused, and deeply disillusioned. Their words to that person who stood alongside them on the road sum it up. "We had hoped." They had seen all Jesus had done. They'd taken his words to heart, and they began to hope that finally God was going to rescue his people from under the fist of the Roman Empire. But the very forces that they had decided that God's chosen one was going to crush had crushed him. It had all come to nothing on a cross. And it looks to me like they're just headed home. They didn't know that God's plan for rescuing his people wasn't simply rescuing them from suffering, but he would have to rescue them through suffering, through his own. The thing is, the first thing that struck me when I read this story, it just means so much to me that Jesus came to them on the road. They're walking away. They did not believe the testimony of the women, and yet Jesus came to walk alongside them. Jesus hadn't met any of their expectations, and yet here he is, right beside them. And as we say our confession, it's okay, you can come. As we say our confession together now, I hope that we can acknowledge that sometimes we're like the disciples. The story of Easter new life seems like a lot of nonsense, and all the ways that God has let us down and not met our expectations feel much more real. What this story says to me is that Jesus won't keep us at a distance for having these thoughts, or even for turning in the other direction and walking away. The risen rescuer chooses to come and walk beside us.
Great, thank you. Now we're going to have the second part of our Bible reading.
Continuing on from Luke's Gospel, chapter 24, from verse 22. "In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said. But him they did not see. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As the two followers of Jesus approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going further. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem, and there they found the 11 and those with them assembled together, and saying, "It is true! The Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread.
Well, if there's a time to crack open your Easter egg, surely it's now. I can't believe some of the tables have waited. Right, get your eggs open. So we get to the great turnaround in the story. The stranger starts to talk to them on the road, and he takes them beyond all the things that they had hoped from Jesus to explain the full scope of God's plan. He takes them through all the scriptures, and you get a sense in the narrative that it's not like he's pointing out a verse here or there, but actually he's taking through the whole of God's story of rescue right from the beginning, how it had always been reaching out to put the whole universe to rights. The one who had created all life had always had a plan for new life. But bizarrely, that plan wasn't going to involve triumph to start with. It was going to involve the life creator taking on death through death. Now, his explanations must have been pretty amazing, because I can never imagine inviting a stranger to tea who started our chat by calling me foolish and slow to believe. I just wouldn't have that person round to my house. But they do invite him round, and as he stays, there's that moment where he must have broken the bread in a way that only Jesus had ever done. And their eyes are opened. They see Jesus for who he really is, and they're filled with so much excitement that they turn and walk all the way back 7 miles back to Jerusalem straight away. And that is what we are given to do as well. Not hike 7 miles, although some of you might have that plan for this afternoon after your roasties, I don't know. But we are called as Christians to tell each other the great story of God's rescue all the way from the creation to new life. We're called to break bread and drink wine. And somehow, as we do this, Jesus is present with us. Sometimes our hearts are strangely warmed like Cleopas's. I think I know that feeling when I'm reading a Bible story and something, it just makes sense. But sometimes they're not, and that's okay. Even so, as we do these things, Jesus's new life is around us and within us. I wish I could sort of describe what that means without using church language. The way that the God life, which broke death at Easter and broke out of the tomb, can actually live within me and alongside me and within my family. And when I do these things here with you, I know that that happens again and again. The last time I had communion, it probably doesn't surprise you that Rosie, my two-year-old, was teething her back molars, and I wasn't even trying to come up for the communion. She was screaming in my face, and I was just stuck at the back. And I was done, really. She was mid-tantrum. I hadn't had any sleep. I hadn't prepared for communion, as you're supposed to do. You know, I wasn't ready, and I couldn't be bothered. And then John and Peter came to me at the back, and Rosie was still screaming and screaming, and I thought, this is humiliating. I'm close to tears. And a big smacked in the face. And as I took a sip of the wine and they offered it, and then they said, "His body broken for you," she was quiet just for 30 seconds, a little miracle, And I think because the communion was something, not something that I had to listen to, it was something that I could taste. It was right there. And it wasn't something to ponder. I don't know why, but in that moment, I felt stronger. And I knew I wasn't on my own. I don't know how that works. But Jesus' presence was revealed to Cleopas and Mary as he broke bread and as he explained the scriptures. And Jesus' presence can and is real to us now as we do these very same things. And we don't do these things alone. I imagine that the Christians in Sri Lanka who are left are doing these things this morning. Christians across the world and across time have been reading these same bits of the Bible, saying these prayers and sharing this meal for a long time. And Jesus is with them and is with us. So we're going to break bread together. The Emmaus story we shared together is so much of our Christian journey within it. Jesus comes alongside us when we're in despair and confusion. And through inviting him to come and share our lives, through listening to God's plans in Scripture, and through sharing bread and wine, we can then share his risen life. We can actually live in this story and share the hope of Easter with each other. But we wouldn't want to suggest or limit that Jesus' risen life can only be found in these two ways, special and precious as they are to us. We prayed earlier that God would help us and stretch us in our faithful imagination. Certainly, I think that was what happened in that house in Emmaus. The disciples' minds, hearts, and lives were stretched by the reality of Jesus' presence with them. I can easily think of two ways in which I need more faithful imagination, in which I need to be stretched beyond myself. Firstly, in my understanding of what Jesus' risen life really means, not just in my life, but in the whole universe. Because it's so easy to think just about how Easter affects me and only me. You know, that's just what I'm like. I forget what it means for everyone. But the new life that started breaking out at Easter is big, strong, and very, very wide. It turns religious expectations on their heads and welcomes anyone and everyone in. It's big enough not just for all humanity, but for the whole universe itself, for everything that God has made. And we've been thinking a lot recently here in the mornings when we've been reading stuff from the prophets about how God's rescue plan is about healing and justice for all people and for the whole planet, and what that means for us as privileged Western Christians. But it takes hope, doesn't it, to keep working for justice and for the care of creation when the news looks increasingly bleak and perhaps we're all doomed. Do you know, without the faith that God has a plan of new life for this world that he made, activism can get boring and very tiring. But when we see with Easter eyes and we're filled with Jesus' new life, we can have hope. Hope for Sri Lanka, hope for Borough, and hope for the whole planet. We know then that we're joining in God's work, and that one day will be fulfilled. Sorry. Also, I need to be stretched to see God's new life, just to see it at all, to recognize the presence of the risen Jesus. You know, sometimes I'm like Cleopas and Mary. He's there, he's right there, and I don't recognize him. In my daily life, boring as it can be, and in the world around me, there are many moments when Jesus could be present to me, when new life is actually at work. But it takes a lot of practice to notice those moments, even sometimes to stop and celebrate them. And that's what we wanted to make today. We wanted it to be a celebration of new life, a recognition of some of the ways that Jesus is already present with us and among us in our whole lives, but also in the universe as we keep working together for God's new creation that is very big and very, very wide. So let's toast together to new life, that it's bigger than we know and it's in more places than we realize. And we're going to eat together now. We've got more food. I think it's important for us to remember that Jesus can meet us in these ordinary things of life, in our everyday meals and in our everyday celebrations. And also, when I say that we want to toast new life together, that wasn't a metaphor. It's time to fill your glasses. Can I just make it clear, we haven't gone bonkers and spent all your giving on Prosecco and brioche. This was just a gift from somebody to help us celebrate. We didn't want to prove we're the most middle-class church in Middlesbrough by spending all our giving on that. But anyway, I think we've all got a glass, so can we stand up, please? And raise a toast to new life. New life.
New life.
And enjoy.